to the splendor, the spectacle, the sparkling sensation, where the romance, the comedy, and the thrill of Disney fantasies come to electric life.
And as our friend Jiminy said, welcome. Welcome to the Disney Nerds Podcast, a place each week where like-minded people get together to discuss all things Disney. We'll help you get your Disney fix on. Here we go.
A Magic Kingdom proudly presents, in a million points of musical light, the magical worlds of Disney.
Hello and welcome to show number 30 of the Disney Nerds Podcast. On this week's show, with Jimmy down in Walt Disney World, Sam and I are going to bring you a very special guest. Before we get to that, though, I just want to remind you that we can be reached at thedisneynerds@yahoo.com. You can also check us out at our website, thedisneynerds.com. We also have a couple pages on Facebook, the Disney Nerds Podcast page and the Disney Nerds group. So check us out there. So now, Sam and I are happy to present Steve Swanson from the Muppet Cast. Take it away, Sam.
All right, guys, it's Sam from Sam's Disney Diary with a very special guest this week on the Disney Nerds Podcast. Out of podcasting lore, out of hibernation, I guess, but I'm not exactly sure. I am very happy to welcome a person I consider a friend, Steve Swanson from the Muppet Cast. Steve,
hey.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. How are you guys? I'm happy to be – okay, here's the thing. I'm happy to be here. I'm in the middle of kind of handling a situation right now. I don't know if you saw on Facebook, but I just posted that I was getting ready to do this podcast, and here he is. I've been sort of invaded here, and I don't know why he's here. He's got to do his like a public service announcement or something.
Okay.
Can you bear with me for a minute here?
Yeah, sure. Sure.
I have to put this guy in front of the mic, and he's got to do this thing. So, all right, come on. Yes! Hello, Kermit the Frog here. I am here to tell you to go see my new movie, The Muppets Most Wanted. It is full of colorful characters and adorable songs, and featuring all of your favorite characters like Fonzie the Bear, Zongo the Alien, and Miss Pig, and even less favorite characters such as Luz Leland, Milfred Hoxpeter, and my trusty assistant, Scooting. So, in conclusion, go see my new movie, The Muppets Most Wanted, in theaters, someplace close to you. Oh, God, will you please just get out of here? Thank you. All right.
What was that?
I'm really sorry about that. Well, he was green. He had a mole on his right cheek, and he wouldn't leave me alone. There was an Interpol agent over here with him, and he just had to do a community service bit for the movie, which I guess we're here to talk about anyways, right? So it worked out, but of all nights to be visited by a Muppet character, and unfortunately one like that. Thanks anyways. But guys, I'm so happy to be here. Thank you for having me on the show.
Welcome, Steve.
Thank you for joining us, Steve, for sure.
Oh yes. Here we all are. What's been going on? How you been?
I know that's exactly what we wanted to ask you, actually. So everybody knows the Muppet Cast, at least if you're up on your Disney podcasting history and not just Disney, but the Muppets, because really your show, which ran for many years from all the way back in April 2007, really didn't just cover the Muppets, but Jim Henson and all of his creations, right?
Absolutely, yeah. At the time, there was nary a Muppet podcast out there, and so I thought, well, I'll give it a shot. Sure, there's a sort of a kind of a long story in the history of how that
podcast came to be started. I just decided to give it a go, and that's really the wonderful thing about podcasting, and still is today. You can pick whatever subject you like, whether there's a podcast about it or not, and just sit in front of a microphone and record yourself talking about it, and chances are you'll find at least some audience out there. And isn't that the philosophy of the Muppets? If just one person believes in you, then eventually two and three and four, and luckily in the Muppet Cast case, a whole lot more people started listening, and it just sort of grew, and I kept doing it, and people kept listening, and it's still one of my absolute most favorite times of my life.
Where did that start, the passion for the Muppets? Where did that start for you?
Oh, gosh. Well, I think like many people, it started when I was just a little kid. I mean, I grew up watching Sesame Street. I was born in 1978, so you'll either feel really young or really old when I say that. I grew up watching Sesame Street and loved Bert and Ernie and Cookie Monster. And Harry Monster scared the crap out of me. I was very uncomfortable whenever he came on the screen, but I loved Grover and all the people on there. And more than anything, and maybe this is sort of a telltale sign, but I loved the music of Sesame Street. Even from a little kid, my parents bought me a lot of old 45s and records, which for those of you playing along at home, used to be things that you listened to music on before iPods came along. I just fell in love with all that stuff. You know, even the Muppet Show. I watched the Muppet Show with my parents growing up. And again, I love the characters, but it's the musical numbers that really stick out in my mind if I think about it, if I think back there. So everything else in life sort of fell into place musically for me as well. So it made a lot of sense that the Muppets would do that too. And even all throughout high school and college, I wasn't probably the biggest Muppet fan in high school because, you know, we teenagers succumbed to peer pressure and, you know, we think a lot of really weird things are cool right now, and we can talk about all that later, too, if you really want to. But, you know, back in college when I was a music major, you know, you find a lot of kindred souls in just a lot of weird stuff in college. And Muppets was one of the things that I reconnected with. And ever since that point, it's been just a real passion and a love of mine. I loved it when some of the old episodes started coming out again on those Time Life VHS tapes and DVDs. And I didn't actually get any of those, but I still had a lot of tapes from when I was a kid and watched all that stuff. And of course, Fraggle Rock too. I wouldn't want to leave that out. Something else that was really built on music. And it's funny because the Muppets seem to be built on puppetry, but if you really look at it, music is such a big, big part of that. So I'm sure that was a huge attraction for me.
I totally agree as far as Sesame Street goes. That definitely transcends generations. I'm about 10 or so years older than you are, but Sesame Street was definitely something from my childhood that I can actually turn on the TV today and still follow and appreciate.
Sure.
The same goes with Fraggle Rock and The Muppet Show. One of the coolest things that we got recently was some of the DVDs from The Muppet Show. They've got three or four different versions out now, and the kids are incredibly... They really, really like the different guests they have and all the different things where the Muppets came from.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's a time capsule.
That is
the episodes of The Muppet Show are really time capsules.
That's a great way to think about it, yeah.
Definitely is. Explaining to the kids who the stars are sometimes is so cool. Explaining what movies they were in, why they're a star, and things like that.
Yeah, I was just watching the Don Knotts episode the other night, and I happened to be watching it on my own, and I thought – my fiance has a 10-year-old daughter who I'm really working on with a lot of things, whether it's the Beatles or the Muppets, or I just got to get this kid up to speed. And I was thinking to myself, how would I explain who Don Knotts was to someone who, granted, she's got good taste, but she's also on Snapchat and Instagram and all that stuff. And
sure.
That 10-year-old girls get caught up in. And it's funny because, you know, we've watched, she came with us to see the new movie as well, and she really loved it. And I think I've tried to show her some of the older movies, and it just didn't stick. And I'm not sure if that's because of the flavor of the script that is out there now and just the way that entertainment is presented to kids, or it's just, you know, something old and so it isn't cool. I really don't know.
So when you say old, you're talking the original Muppet movie and maybe Muppets Take Manhattan? Talking,
that's right. Classic, baby.
Those are the Muppet movies, by the way.
They are. Well, one of them is really called The Muppet Movie. And thank goodness the soundtrack is out there again on Spotify. And you can find all this old stuff that's coming back out now. I believe all the old films are out on Blu-ray as of this recording. And I really enjoy watching through a lot of those. I don't have them all yet, but getting to rewatch some of those in high def, not that that makes the biggest difference in the world, but it's nice to see that these pieces are important enough to keep throughout our history and to keep being updated and remembered and rewatched and reloved and discovered by newer and newer generations.
And a lot of that, like when on the Disney Nerds, we talk about Walt a lot and what he's done, and it keeps coming back to that. I really think you can't talk about the Muppets without talking about Jim Henson, right? That was him. All of these creatures, all of these creations are were his passion. And like you said before, one person is two, is four, is eight. That's really where it all started, right?
It really is. Yeah. Jim started back in 1955, and that was his TV debut, but he started back in high school. In 1955, he debuted Sam and Friends.
I knew his name was Sam. I was waiting for you to bring it up.
Oh, yes. With his then girlfriend, Jane Neeble, who he went on to marry. It was, by today's standards, a very primitive art form, but Jim was such an outside-the-box thinker even back then that he took the medium of puppetry, which was actually a very, very confined art form as far as where and how it was really performed, and he made the puppet stage into the TV stage and just used the screen in new and different ways as a puppeteer. And even throughout productions like The Muppet Show, he pioneered so many different ways of shooting puppets on screen and really taking inanimate objects and making us believe that they were living, breathing characters. And as proof is in the pudding, today they really are, for so many of us, living characters.
Well, absolutely. What about Walter? Yeah, he is.
Absolutely. And Walter is us. That's the characterization of Walter is we Muppet fans.
Even going back to Sesame Street, the way they always worked with the puppets with the live actors, and the live actors treated them just like they were another live actor throughout the show.
There's a really wonderful book that was written called Street Gang by Michael Davis. And if you haven't read it, at least do yourself a favor and get the audiobook, because it's read by Carol Spinney, who is also Big Bird and Oscar the Grouch.
Yeah. But
in that book, they talk about the experience of some of the writers and producers and people working on these shows having to come up to Jim or Frank Oz after a take while they're doing Bert and Ernie or maybe even Kermit and Fozzie and, conversing with Jim and Frank, but then Kermit and Piggy or Bert or someone else would jump into the conversation and would say things that Jim Henson himself would not ever be the type of person to say. So these are separate personalities that were really created. And when they were at least on a puppeteer's hand, they were very alive and had their own thoughts and feelings and opinions and voices. I mean, voices are a very small part of it. And if you talk to most Muppeteers, they don't really want to talk so much about that they do the voice of Kermit or Grover or whoever. You know, they are that character. And that's really important. That's a big distinction where you have these people who are not necessarily – they are puppeteers, but they're also actors. And they play a role. And they play a role through a puppet that they could never probably play if it was just really them and their own bodies and voices on stage.
And that is incredible. I can remember you brought up Carol Spinning. One of the later episodes of the Muppet Cast, it's been a while now since you've been on the air, but you were talking about a Kickstarter project, the movie coming out. I think it's called Being Big Bird.
I am Big
Bird. So whatever happened with that? Did that finish? Do you know?
I believe they did achieve their funding goals, and it's already the filming has wrapped up. I think it's actually set to debut in a film festival in Canada sometime very soon. So it's going to begin making the rounds in film festivals. I imagine we'll see it out on DVD very soon. Yeah, I'm so proud and so happy for those filmmakers, and they were actually on the Muppet Cast too, talking about that. It's been a couple years, I think, at this point since they were on.
It has, but you brought the name up, and that's what I remembered, because more specifically, a few of the behind-the-scenes pictures that were tweeted from Carol were just absolutely incredible. You just look at it and can't comprehend, you know, being there or what was going on behind the scenes and what it would have been like to have been working with Jim. Just incredible.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to seeing that, yeah.
So in news from the Muppets, since some of your last episodes there, Steve, there's a few things that have happened. One, which I thought was really interesting, was the Muppets doing a test in London for a Broadway-style show.
Isn't that interesting? Yeah.
So have you seen that? Have you followed that at all?
I haven't heard a whole lot about it yet. I've seen what pretty much everyone else has seen. I think London is such an appropriate place for that if it becomes a reality. I mean, The Muppet Show was shot in London. I would love to see that. It would be a little difficult unless it's a really limited run, because a lot of those guys are also, if they're going to use the actual puppeteers, you know, a lot of them live here in the States, especially in LA or New York. A lot of them work on Sesame Street, and those, they have demanding schedules as well. So I would love to see that, especially if it's with the real performers. Now, if it's with pre-recordings and maybe other characters, or not other characters, but other puppeteers, call me a snob, but I might not be as interested.
Yeah, well, at that point, you're almost talking about a Disney World attraction if you do something like that.
Exactly. You're almost talking about.
And it could fit in that setting pretty well, right?
It could, yeah.
I think so anyway.
Did they mention how they were going to do that on a Broadway show as far as the puppets on stage, or would it be blocked out, or would they have live actors?
I'm not really sure. I mean, you look at a show like Avenue Q where it's not necessarily blocked out, and it's just the actors up there holding the puppets, and your eyes are just drawn. Instead of looking at the puppeteer, you're looking at the puppet characters themselves. I don't think they would really do that with the Muppets, because that was never the style that they operated with.
Right.
So I could see a lot of puppet walls, but at the same time, Avenue Q scaled for Broadway. So I can imagine that a Muppet production, if they really wanted to do it, they could make that work. It would be very interesting to see how, but I'm sure it could happen.
Right. They have something similar down in the Disney Animal Kingdom with the Finding Nemo attraction.
Yeah.
Which is good, where they have the puppets on stage with the actors. And you're right. You do really stop looking at the actors and you really pay attention to the puppet.
You really do. Yeah.
So, I'd be interested to see that. Can't wait.
And, you know, they did something similar to that concept in Fraggle Rock. You know, you can hide a puppeteer behind just about anything. And so if you have, you know, great big sets with a lot of stuff sticking out that people can get behind, you can fill up a stage with puppets pretty easily. It would be really cool to see just how creative they can be in staging a live performance like that, you know, where you have, there's not just the television camera in front of you, but there are members of the audience that are sitting and can see at just about any different angle given where they're sitting. So it's a really difficult prospect in my mind. I mean, I'm sure it's been explained to the Disney executives in a way that they can understand it, and sounds like maybe they're even getting behind it. From my little vantage point, I'm interested, certainly. You know, I'd love to know more at this point.
Right.
I think we all do.
Sure.
You know what else I'd love to see is more Muppets in Walt Disney World. We've talked about this before.
Now, I've been a little out of the loop as far as many Disney podcasts. But, of course, I've been listening to the Disney Nerds podcast this whole time.
All 30 of them, Steve. Thank you.
All 30 of them. That's right. Is that what we're up to now? Okay, good. Good. So one thing that I saw very recently was the Muppets in Epcot, right?
Yes, absolutely. They're part of the Flower and Garden Festival, which is a premiere of the topiary for Kermit and Miss Piggy, promoting the Muppets Most Wanted, which is wonderful.
Yeah, there's like a little around the park game or something that you can punch in a code in different
yes,
spots.
Yes, a treasure hunt of sorts. You got
that's
it.
Right, yeah, that's right. That's right.
Kim Possible to Phineas and Ferb to maybe some other incarnation I'm not aware of to the Muppets. Teasing you around Epcot and leading you from one place to another. And I think that's pretty awesome.
That is awesome. Now, I haven't experienced it yet. I know this is in addition to the Agent P that's still there. But I'm definitely looking forward to what's going on there.
I wonder how long that'll last through the run of the movie.
Well, yeah, I don't know. I mean, Walter was a new character introduced this last movie. In 2011, and he stuck around and was a pretty big part of this movie. In fact, they sort of break the fourth wall at one point and talk about how they made a great big movie about how he joined the Muppets. Why is he leaving? And I thought that was great. One of a classic Muppet-style joke of breaking the fourth wall and sort of very self-referential stuff. Mm-hmm. Walter is sort of that new character that I can see sticking around for a long time, the same way that Pepe came around in the late 90s in Muppets Tonight. And he was sort of the one breakout character that came from that show to join the main Muppet troupe. Right. I see that happening with Walter. I'm not sure about Constantine, just because he is so close in appearance to another existing character that I don't know how it would work. I mean, it might work, but then again, they're, and I thought about this a lot. You know, the Muppets are very famous for not only celebrity cameos, but introducing new villains and new Muppet characters a lot in their movies. You have, you know, villains like Nikki Holiday and some of the frogs from Muppets Take Manhattan. You have a lot of bit part characters and even just a lot of characters that stand out sometimes that they're here for a movie and then they're gone. And I could see Constantine potentially being a character more along those lines rather than, say, part of the enduring Muppet troupe. It doesn't seem to me like he has very many dimensions to have a whole lot of staying power. And oh my gosh, he's knocking at my window again. Get out of here.
Again.
Go. All right, he's gone. But
I want to real quick go back to Epcot for a second. I just found so back in American Adventure, that's where Kermit and Miss Piggy are, right next to the smokehouse, which is their new. So these are their outdoor kitchens, which are really the food and wine booths kind of redone so they can use them for Flower and Garden. Mm-hmm. Which is pretty cool. So now when you walk around Flower and Garden, enjoy the topiaries, you can enjoy a drink and a small plate of something. But right next to Kermit and Miss Piggy, at the smokehouse, you can get a pulled pork slider.
Oh, I was hoping you weren't going to say that.
And a Pigalicious bacon cupcake.
You're kidding.
So I look at this and go, why don't they just put frog legs on the menu?
Exactly. Well, while we're at it.
Call it Doc Hoppers.
Oh, that's awesome.
Out of control.
That would be so funny. There's always – and see, that's the thing. In Muppet canon, throughout the movies and the TV shows, there are so many little bits and pieces of everything that you could take the idea of Doc Hoppers, which I think they even brought back and at least referenced in the 2011 movie. I'm not mistaken. I'd have to go back and watch that. But I know they've referenced it in recent things. There was a Christmas special that they brought it back for. But there's so many different things in the Muppets that you can bring back little bits and pieces here and there, and fans who have been fans for years will get excited because it's something that traces back to their childhood, and kids today just kind of accept it as, you know, part of the movie and part of something new with the Muppets, and chances are they really enjoy it too. One of the things that I you know, it took me a couple of viewings to accept this. Not that I really had a choice. I mean, watching a movie and you've kind of got to accept what's on the screen. But
right.
I was not necessarily happy with Together Again, Again. It just didn't seem, you know, it seemed like, okay, we're going to rehash another Muppet song. Some people had a problem with the usage of Rainbow Connection in the 2011 movie. I didn't necessarily have a problem with that. I did, however, kind of think that Together Again, Again was just a cheap last minute addition. I mean, I get why they used it, and yes, the lyrics work story-wise, but I still don't feel very good about that. I've made my peace with it. Again, this is a crazy Muppet fan talking. I've made my peace with the fact that they did that to my movie, but
and you're moving on.
And I'm moving right along.
Moving right along. Dun, 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 dun.
That's right.
The only other thing down at Walt Disney World that's been happening, Steve, is they have been aggressively removing every reference to Kodak in the park now that Nikon's the new sponsor.
Oh, okay.
To the point where even over in Honey, I Shrunk the Kids' playground set, that big roll of Kodak 35mm film that the kids slide down, well, it's just a big plastic thing that the kids slide down now. Only place anywhere that I know the Kodak logo still exists is in the Muppet pre-show. And I hope they don't do anything to that.
Well, you can't do anything with that. I mean, the one thing I guess you could do if you wanted, the technology is there. You could superimpose a logo
over the Kodak.
Nikon, you know, right over it, yeah.
They never actually say the word Kodak in the pre-show. The only way, the only place they say Kodak is in the spiel before they start the actual movie in the inside the theater.
Well, the cast member, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Which what I think the cast they've member already says. Removed. Yeah.
So you can change that script easy enough. It's a little bit more difficult to change what's in the pre-show film, especially since it's on Laserdisc, I think. So you'd have to basically update the technology. Not that it's hard to transfer anything from Laserdisc, per se, but the man hours would have to be put in there to do that. And it's possible, but there's kind of a nostalgia part of me that wishes that they would just keep that as Kodak. Whether or not they are able to do that or not would be a different story.
Right.
Right. And that pre-show today is almost as good as the attraction itself. So to change it.
Oh, God, yeah.
But unfortunately, the quick, easy way and the cheap way would be, unfortunately, to cut that part of that segment out of the pre-show.
You
which can't cut up, Chuck. Chuck.
That's a great segment. Boss. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah, no, I love that segment. And that really is. That pre-show is the best pre-show in the four parks. And it's sort of an attraction unto itself. And again, a testament to Jim Henson's creativity. It's just that well done that, you know, it opened in 1990. Here we are almost 25 years later. And it still holds up and it's still a fan favorite.
Right. I wish they would actually kind of refilm or do something different inside the theater, but totally leave the pre-show alone.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they would have to leave the pre-show alone. And if you're going to redo anything inside the theater, and I wouldn't be necessarily opposed to that because, let's face it, you could update a lot of things. I would be sad to see Jim's Kermit go away.
Oh, absolutely.
Right.
But I think there is definitely room for Walter and for Pepe and for a lot of the new characters that have come along since then. I mean, that piece of footage was developed, that film was developed in 1994 or 5, sorry, way before that. 1986 or 7, I'm going to guess, when Jim had first begun playing around with Waldo, the 3D character, which he actually showed on his TV show, the Jim Henson Hour. You can watch all that stuff on YouTube. It's out there. So you can head out to YouTube and look up some old episodes of the Jim Henson Hour, which is another thing that I never quite finished on the Muppet Cast. We started doing a long series talking about all the episodes in the Jim Henson Hour because at that point it was a little difficult to get online to see them and to have any access to them, really. So I really liked bringing out the audio, and there was one particular episode called Secrets of the Muppets, I think. And I think that was the one where Jim took us into his workshop and showed us Waldo, the 3D character, and a little bit of how that character was rendered. And if you look at those computer graphics back then, it was the most advanced thing that you could get your hands on. You know, I mean, by today's standards, a Game Boy can do more, but it was just the most incredible thing to see Jim operate this 3D character in real time. And so it's still the way that they put him into the production and Muppet Vision 3D. I mean, he is the 3D version of Muppet Vision 3D. He is that representation. And it's crazy that a character that by today's technological standards is so primitive that he still stands out so strongly to many Muppet fans.
And he stands out because of the story. He fits right in. That's all part of it. Are there any Muppets that are original for Muppet Vision, or were those all – was Bean Bunny around prior to that?
Bean Bunny was around prior to that. In fact, we were just watching that the other day at the house. We were beginning to watch a 1980s TV special on HBO called Tale of the Bunny Picnic, which you can also watch. Yes, you can also watch that on YouTube now. It's probably not the best Muppet special in the world, but it has a very dear place in my heart because I watched the heck out of it that summer on HBO. And I have it on VHS now. I enjoy watching it online, and I love Bean Bunny in that because you get to see the beginnings of that character. Bean Bunny hasn't really evolved a whole lot since that first special. He's still that sort of cuteness embodiment that everyone else torments, especially his older brother Lugsy. And he just, you know, that's what they do to him now. He's so cute that they love to just torture the poor little guy. So you see him on just about anything that the Muppets are a part of. Anytime he appears, something bad happens to him. You know, whether it's being blown up in something or getting eaten, or in the Muppets Christmas Carol, Scrooge throws the wreath at him because he's out there singing on the doorstep. And I love Bean Bunny because he's just a character that you love to hate.
That makes so much more sense in the show then, as far as him running away and everything. It's just another thing.
He's had it up to here in his tiny little
bunny. He's out of here. Bean's going up for a sandwich. Anybody want anything? Forever?
That's good.
It's got to be the most quoted show ever.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, give it up for the writers in that. You know, people like Jerry Jewell and I think maybe even Craig Shem and some of the guys who wrote everything for the Muppets. And they wrote
and
that
those
stuff
jokes too. Are timeless, too. That's why they hold up 20 years later.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, and, you know, that's when I watched some of the new movies and some of the new footage, and I kind of wonder if Scooter singing Moves Like Jagger is going to hold up. Now, I get it. That part isn't for me, and that's for the 10-year-old soon-to-be stepdaughter. I get that. But it stands out to me as a weird part, the same way that Piggy singing the Macarena, which I think even to the 10-year-old felt like watching oldies. the Muppets doing what the chickens doing, Forget You, in the first movie a few years ago. I mean, I get it. They've got to stay current with the times, and the Muppets are still relevant, and that's great news. And even when I get bothered by little pieces like that, you can go back and watch the Muppet Show. They were doing, you know, the same music that was contemporary back then on television. Now, I watch it now, and it's nostalgia, and I love it. But that was exactly like Scooter going out and singing Moves Like Jagger. That's exactly the same thing.
So now, Steve, let's take a step back. You're very much interested in the Muppets. You've shown that through the shows and everything else that you do for us. But where did that Muppet interest come? Where did the puppet interest start?
With puppets? Oh, gosh. You know, puppetry was probably the least, the area that where I have the least amount of interest, I'll say, because I'm terrible at it. I'm a huge fan of the Muppets. I'm an awful puppeteer. And I learned that because, I've had several opportunities to prove it to myself and to many other people. Well, there was a really wonderful workshop that Steve Whitmire came to Atlanta. He lives in Atlanta, but he came to the Center for Puppetry Arts for a weekend and put on some talks for any puppeteers who were there and who can make it. And I drove as far as Ohio to go see it. And he put on some puppetry workshops there as well. And he showed basically how to be a screen puppeteer, you know, and he walked about a dozen people in each class through a bunch of classic rock songs. So you were basically teaching puppets how to sing, you know. And I didn't get a chance to puppeteer in front of him, which is probably good because he bought me breakfast the next day and that might not have happened if he saw me puppeteer. But, you know, getting to see people who are that good at what they do, you know, in many areas of life, sometimes you just watch it and you just get mad. You go, oh, okay, really? You're just showing off. But Steve was actually very, very humble and a lot of fun to watch that. But then another good friend of mine from Canada, a puppeteer named Tom Stewart, actually made a puppet of me. He made it for my 30th birthday. Oh, yeah. I've got Puppet Steve here. And I wish you could see him, but you can't because it's a podcast. So you're just going to have to take my word for it. But he's a great-looking puppet. He's a Muppet-style puppet. He's, you know, got arm rods and everything. And he's got the glasses because that was back when I was 30, way before I had LASIK, and when I had much more hair. So he's a pretty good rough representation of how I looked about 6 years ago. And I love puppeteering him. I'm just not good at it. You know, I can't pick up a puppet and just give it life the way the Muppeteers can. And of course, few people can. But what I've learned through doing the Muppet Cast is that there is a very large, vast community of puppeteers out there. And most of them are better than me, which is fine because I like watching their work much more than they would enjoy watching mine. But I have made a couple videos with Puppet Steve. One of them I actually made for Eric and Dan from the Mouse Guest Weekly podcast, if you remember that show. Those guys.
Yep, yeah. Very much so.
For, I believe it was one of their anniversary episodes. They did a video episode and I had Puppet Steve playing the piano and singing the Muppet song Halfway Down the Stairs. So that was a lot of fun. That actually gave me a chance to set up the video camera, play with angles. I had it hooked up to a TV as a monitor. So it was really a chance to get to do some Muppet-style puppetry, because that's exactly what they do. They look at monitors while they do their characters.
I've always seen a lot of different cuts from when they do Sesame Street, and they show the behind-the-scenes video of all that, and I'm just amazed at how well that they can do that with their hands above their heads, looking at the monitors, usually we're down toward the floor, and just keep everything so organized.
Oh, yeah. There's a whole science to that, I'm sure, too. You know, I got the very, very great fortune to talk to Frank Oz for one of my anniversary episodes. And I asked him about, you know, puppeteering in close quarters like that, you know, with Bert and Ernie, especially with those two guys. And, you know, what do you learn about someone having to perform so closely with them for so many years? Because, you know, there's got to be some great insights that Frank picked up about Jim just from the way he performed, you know. And I'm sitting there waiting for a great answer. And Frank's response was, well, I got a great idea of what Jim's armpit smells like.
What deodorant it uses.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, it was the 70s, you know.
So you had shows from April of 2007 through March of 13. Yes. 238. So those, you just mentioned an interview with Frank Oz, which is absolutely incredible, right? What else stands out to you from that run of things you go, wow, I can't believe that I was able to do that?
Oh my gosh.
Anything else? I know I'm putting you on the spot.
Sam, no, you're not. There are so many things. I can't boil it down. Okay. Talking to Carol Spinney on Skype also was great. Not only was he so willing to bring out Big Bird and Oscar the Grouch on Skype, but he was a great interviewee because I asked him four questions in an hour. He just talked the whole time. And it was fantastic. In fact, also getting to meet him in person in New Jersey when the book Street Gang came out, there were a lot of puppeteers that were out there for Sesame Street's 40th anniversary. And I took a road trip out to William Patterson University. Gosh, I just remember that, in New Jersey, to watch them all talk about Richard Hunt, who was another puppeteer who passed away around about the same time that The Muppet Christmas Carol came out. And then, of course, reminiscing over all the years of Sesame Street. That was amazing, not only because of the talk that I got to see, but because of the friends that I got to meet, such as Ryan and Joe from Tough Pigs and my buddy Dave Holteen, who's done so many incredible art projects that I still will never be able to pay him back for. He's so awesome. So there was that. There was also going back to New York City in 2010, for a weekend with Ryan and Joe and just palling around New York with those guys and seeing all the Muppet sights. There was a four-part video series that came out of that.
I've seen the episode where you were about to go to the studios, right?
Yep, we went to the Jim Henson Workshop in Queens.
That's awesome.
That was pretty amazing. You got to see some of the puppets being built and meet some more of my heroes, like Raleigh Cruson, who's still one of the puppet builders there. Gosh, what else? Of course, my trips to Atlanta, I loved all of my trips to Atlanta, no matter if there were Muppet people there or not. There, I have so many great friends, and Atlanta truly is the second home of the Muppet cast. So that was great. I got to meet some fantastic people like Kevin Clash and Heather Henson and Cheryl Henson and Lisa Henson. And
that's great.
Steve Whitmire. They all come to this center for puppetry arts at different times, and it really is a special place. So all my trips there were outstanding. Of course, any time that I got an excuse to go down to Walt Disney World for the show, or not for the show, was great. you know, probably all the road trips, I would say. Let's just wrap it up that way and say all the road trips were special for one reason or another. It's always fun to sit there in the studio and, you know, record a quote-unquote normal show and talk for, you know, an hour or so and do all the editing and make it sound great for people to listen to, because I know that a lot of people got something really meaningful out of doing what you do. And you never quite realize that sitting alone in your little room doing your editing, but there's a whole world that, and you guys know this now too, that your work goes out to. And people from all walks of life and all places and stripes contact you and let you know that they appreciate what you're doing. And those people become friends. And that is probably, more than anything else, probably my favorite thing about having done the podcast, is the friends that I met and that I still talk to, many of them to this day. It's an experience that probably, unfortunately, you couldn't get unless you had some sort of production like a podcast. But as you know, and as anyone else out there who does a podcast knows, and if you're thinking of doing a podcast, listening to this, you should do it, because one, it can be very rewarding if you are the kind of person who would get, who would feel that way about it. It's there's no other feeling like it. And the friends that you make and that you'll keep throughout your entire life are just incredible.
Yeah, I totally agree. Our little exploits in podcasting have been very rewarding in that regard. All I can't tell you how much in mm-hmm. the people that we meet, the people we keep track of and touch with, and the people we get to interview, like Steve Swanson from the Muppet Cast.
Absolutely.
Like me.
some of the shows that I remember as being some of the saddest shows, but yet some of the best shows, were the shows you had for the anniversary of Jim Henson's passing.
Oh, man.
And
so there were two, right? Yeah.
And there were,
yeah.
And they were just incredible shows, and that you included the audience a lot in those shows. And I think there was probably shows afterwards where people would then be replying and kind of getting back to you after they had listened to that show of their feelings, their memories and stuff like that from Jim Henson. And I actually wanted to thank you because I think that was kind of a help for his closure as far as when he passed away and then just everything that happened afterwards as far as the Muppets continuing on and such. So, as far as it definitely stuck out to me, even this, you know, many years later.
Yeah, and if you go to MuppetCast.com and click on most popular, number one is his first show, and the second one listed, show number six, is that show you're talking about.
That was the Jim Henson Memorial. Yep.
It was.
And that was a tough one for me, even, just to talk through. And I know it really hit home with a lot of people, and I appreciate both of your comments, really. That still means the world when I hear, and I do occasionally still hear from people who just found the show and are listening, and that really does mean a lot. You know, in one way, I feel very humbled that I can make a production like that, that can touch people. And one of the most important sides of the Muppets for me is their emotional side. You know, the songs like Just One Person or When I Grow Too Old or a lot of things, just so many great, just not sad, but moments that touch your soul. And that's another thing that Jim did. He wasn't just funny. He could take these characters and they were alive not only because they could make you laugh and not only because they could make you, not only because they could sing, but they made you feel the same very deep feelings that many of the best Oscar-winning films can stir up in us. And isn't that not only just amazing, but a miracle for a performer to have that gift? And it's something that we can still enjoy now. And I think that translates to anyone. I don't care where you are or how old you are.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Right after they had the video that they released that had the Muppets talking about the passing, and as far as knowing that everything was going to be all right and that Kermit and Miss Piggy and everybody was still going to stick with us, just came through in that video incredibly well. And it was almost as if it was the puppeteers basically talking and saying what they had basically inside of them at the time. And not to get too sad, I don't want to continue on really as maudlin as this, but it definitely stuck out. And talking about those shows kind of triggered a little memory as far as that little video went too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the Muppets Remember Jim Henson, I think is what it's called. Or the Muppets Celebrate Jim Henson. And yeah, the lines are blurred very often between puppet and performer, and that is definitely one show that's very, very clear.
Okay, well, now let's talk about something a little bit more cheery. That now the Muppets have come back to us in the movie form. We had the Muppet movie, or the first, what was the name of the 2011 movie?
Just the Muppets. Muppets.
Okay, the Muppets.
Muppets.
Coming back to us, and then just recently we had the second.
They paid someone a lot of money for that title, by the way.
The Muppets?
Someone made out like a bandit with the marketing for that.
Yeah, the consultant to come in. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, it was a little tougher for them for the second one then.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, the Muppets again was easy.
Well, that was the original title, and I was pretty mad about that. So,
yeah, you were
once,
not.
Once
happy.
They heard that, they went ahead and changed that for me. And I do appreciate that if you're listening, Disney.
Okay, well, talking about those two new movies, I remember seeing the first movie, The Muppets, and I believe it came out, I want to say maybe Thanksgiving Day.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the first time that my family actually didn't do Thanksgiving with the family. We decided that day we were going to have Thanksgiving on our own. And that morning we went to see the Muppets and had our Thanksgiving dinner afterwards. And the movie was so good afterwards, and it kind of spoke to what you mentioned before about the music, that we ended up buying that soundtrack before we even got to the restaurant where we were eating for our Thanksgiving dinner. Nice. And it still, even to today, really sticks out. And the second one, I'm not going to be able to say that yet. I haven't seen it again, and I really haven't had the overall need I did the first movie to go out and buy music from the second one. I'm hoping that's going to grow on me, but what do you think about that?
You know, the one, it's funny because the most unlikely candidate from that movie, from the second one, is the one that sticks out of my mind. And I find myself thinking about the interrogation song the most because it's just very cute and very funny and probably one of the most Muppety songs. People talk about the "we're doing a sequel" song and compare it to the "Hey, a Movie" song from The Great Muppet Caper. And I get that, but that's why that kind of song has already been done. There's so many great songs, I think, better songs from the 2011 movie. And I know that it's the same songwriter and everything between that movie and this one. But I think it's always harder to recapture the magic a second time. In fact, the Muppets even said that at the beginning of their sequel. So you had songs like "Life's a Happy Song," which I think was the one that really should have won the Oscar. But that's my opinion. I love that song.
Right.
That embodies the Muppets so well. Even though the Muppets don't necessarily sing it, some of the favorite spots from the Muppet Show are guest star spots. They don't necessarily star the Muppets either. So I can take that because it has the right feeling to it. Manor Muppet, of course, stands out. Almost every song from the 2011 film stands out. With the exception of Tex Richmond, and we won't talk about that.
Yeah. Oh, no. That still sticks out to me. That's a really, really original song. I thought that was really cool the way they did that. And unfortunately, that kind of you could sing that really easy.
Well, you can. You can because he doesn't sing. But yeah, you're right about that. but then so many of the songs from this second movie, I walked away and I had the soundtrack on Spotify, so I have to admit I didn't pay my $10 for it. But I did pay my $10 a month for Spotify, so in my mind that kind of counts. You know, so many of those songs, I walked away from them going, yeah, okay, I understand what you were going for here. I'm not sure if you got it, but I like the something, "How Could Something So Wrong" song. Mm-hmm. I get it. That's the 11 o'clock number. They're trying to sort of take Manor Muppet and step it up a notch and change it around and bring Celine Dion out, and I get it. It just – and I do think about that song, and it's not that it's a bad song. It just – it's not the same bullseye that many of the songs from the 2011 film have. It just – yes, it's a Muppet song, and it feels like a Muppet song, but there's just – and it's one of those things that's very difficult in pop culture and especially in art and movies and music to define, but – for me personally, it just doesn't have that same it factor to it.
I'll tell you what, as far as the second one goes, I think it did do a little bit better on the cameos.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I still chuckle over Usher, the Usher.
The Usher, yes. Oh, my gosh, far as that a perfect was funny. One. Between Usher and P. Diddy, I'll take Usher every time.
And the story itself was pretty good. Although, you know what? In the second movie, I started getting tired of them not being able to tell the difference between Kermit and Constantine. I know it was the joke. I know it was the mole. But you know what? I started getting a little bit – that was getting thin toward the end of it.
Yeah, that's one of the jokes that did sort of wear a little thin. And I – maybe this is just me being silly, but I didn't know where the steel teeth came from because it was never advertised that he was a character that had or at least put in these steel dentures. But all of a sudden he's got him. I mean, I don't know if I missed a reference or something, or maybe there's going to be a deleted scene that explains it.
As far as
his superpower, I don't know.
The history where he got those from?
Yeah.
I thought they were just making fun of the Bond character, the Jaws guy.
I saw that parallel. I just never saw the setup for that particular punchline, you know?
Right.
They've sort of done the jewel heist story before. They haven't done the world tour story. And I will say that... this movie, as opposed to the 2011 film, this movie's portrayal and, I'm just going to say it, the voicings of the characters are so much better and are so much more consistent. My biggest problem character-wise of the 2011 film was Fozzie Bear, because if you listen to his dialogue, the first sentence of about anything he says sounds very different from the rest of whatever his line is. And it was like, it almost felt like Eric Jacobson had sort of a rough pass in take one of saying the line, and they never went back for take two of the beginning of that line. It's just, he feels almost like he sounds a little bit like a baby Fozzie. But Fozzie sounded great in this movie. All the characters, I'm going to say, all of them sounded great. The puppeteering was phenomenal. In that sense, everything in this movie came together much better than the first one.
Right. And I guess based on the popularity of the second one, we're going to probably see a third one.
I would hope so. You know, I do know that the numbers haven't been exactly what Disney was hoping for. They went up against, surprisingly, Mr. Peabody and Sherman, and that sort of kicked their tails. But Disney-wise, as far as a release of a movie and what the movie will actually gross worldwide, I'm sure it's going to be just fine. They're probably going to hit at least a million. And yeah, I wouldn't doubt that we'd see a third movie, because also, thankfully, Muppet movies are pretty inexpensive to make.
Well, that's always a bonus.
Absolutely. I mean, hey.
It's a franchise that still just seems like it could be so much more.
It really does. I know. I
keep thinking that. I mean, look at what they're doing with all the other franchises. And if you look back at history, and even when the Muppets were first introduced into Walt Disney World, unfortunate circumstances around Jim and the state of affairs and what was happening with the characters. But that was supposed to be Muppet Land over there in MGM Studios. Oh, yeah. That would have been Cars Land before Cars Land, that whole concept of that theming. And there's just so much more that can happen. I hope that somebody turns that around. And there are rumors that it may happen, but there's so much more than Muppets can
rumors.
Be.
There's been rumors for a while, and it would be nice if those materialized. But you know what I would really love to see happen is, you know, Toy Story has had two shorts now going before the Muppet movies. Yep. I would love to see the Muppets have a short before the next Toy Story movie.
Right.
Love that idea.
And I was thinking that's the only place I think we'll ever see Constantine again. We were talking about Constantine who was like a one-and-done movie type of character.
Yeah.
I could see him actually being in a short with him doing something maybe outside the general population of the Muppets.
Oh, I could definitely see that.
And that you can get away from that because, you know, he's supposed to be so evil to begin with, and then you can kind of play with that. But
that would be amazing, yeah. That's a great idea. You should send that to Disney. Well, wait a minute. They're listening right now, so they've already got it.
That's sure. They've already written it down.
Yeah.
Well, now Sam mentioned about how he wishes that the Muppets can be used in so many more different ways and such like that. One of the things I've been seeing a trend of, and I'm curious to your opinion about it, Steve, is the use of the Muppets in the commercials. They're running a couple different commercials now on TV. The one of them is an ad for Cars, where basically the Muppets are making the commercial just a little bit more exciting to take everybody on a ride, similar to the rides in the Muppet movies, of course. I'm actually kind of getting a little sick of that, in my own opinion of it. In that, you know what, these guys aren't really supposed to be shilling. They're supposed to be just having fun, but because they're in the commercial, you see them every maybe hour or so.
Well, you're talking to a guy who doesn't have cable TV, so I won't have seen the commercials as much as you have. I think they actually did pop up on Hulu once, and I kind of let out a little squeal there. That was really awesome to see.
Mm-hmm. And don't get me wrong, the first 20 times, I thought it was a pretty cool thing to see. But it's starting to grow thin.
Right. Well, I will tell you, the Muppets have a rich history and tradition of shilling. Jim Henson, from his very earliest days, you can go back. In fact, if you haven't done this, go out to YouTube. After you're done listening to this podcast, go out to YouTube and Google Wilkins Coffee. Because Jim Henson, in his very earliest days, was signed to a lot of different companies. Among the funniest of them was his Wilkins coffee commercials, because he invented two characters, Wilkins and Wonkins. And Wilkins was always trying to get dear old Wonkins to drink Wilkins coffee, and Wonkins won't do it. And so Wonkins becomes the brunt of, shotgun blasts, being blown out of a cannon, any kind of explosion. And that's probably where Jim got a lot of his very earliest ideas for destroying Muppet characters, from those commercials, or you know, characters being eaten or whatever, or thrown around. There was Wilkins Coffee. There was IBM, Jim Henson. A lot of people are familiar with the Jim Henson Think Different poster. But way before that, Jim Henson made a series of short films for IBM, both for their internal corporate use and I think for their external consumer commercials. He's also made commercials for American Express. Gosh, there's so many. But so the Muppets, I will tell you, there's a whole ton of Muppet commercials out there. Mm-hmm. But I can definitely understand how the concept of overplay can come into effect there.
Right. Actually, I am remembering the IBM commercial. That was pretty good.
Yeah.
So it's great to catch up. I know we're pushing our hour here. Steve, what have you been up to here lately? I know there's been a lot of activity, but what have you been doing?
Oh, my gosh. First of all, it's so awesome reconnecting with you, Sam. And I know you come through Columbus a lot, and yep. We get to hang
can't
out there. So
there
I'm definitely
–
yep, can't wait there too. And Ed, I know you're based out of Philly. Columbus right. isn't that far of a drive. I've driven out to you before. I've driven out to Philly. You actually have someone from the Muppet community living in Philly. Did you know that?
Oh, no, I didn't. Who's that?
Yes, my good buddy Gene Beretta, who is the brother of Muppeteer Bill Beretta. However, Gene is also a Muppet designer, actually, and performer in his own right, and writes amazing children's stories that he's been nominated for numerous awards for and been on all sorts of TV shows. And you should go out and actually hit up GeneBeretta.com. And check out some of his work too, from a local Philly-based gent.
Nice.
But as for me personally, let's see, I do still quite a lot of music. I know that's no surprise to just about anyone who knows me. I still teach voice lessons just about every night of the week. I used to be teaching at a local studio, and now I've kind of gone out on my own, and it's a lot of fun. It's a very different challenge, you know. But I'm still doing the IT thing during the day. I'm
right.
a mild-mannered IT guy for a well-known insurance company here based in Columbus, Ohio. That's going really well. I'm having a lot of fun with that. Life has just been awesome, but crazy, but still awesome over the past year. The last time that many of you heard from me, I was still married, and I was still, I'd say, ending the first administration. And that is... gone by the wayside, but she's still down there in Disney doing what she loves, and I think that's awesome. And if you're ever down in Disney World, you just might get a hug from Mickey or, Donald or Duffy, you know, or Jake the Pirate, and you should, because I know that's talk about someone following their dream. I think that's really amazing that she's down there doing that. Mm-hmm. As for me, I've been up here having a lot of fun with music and watching Muppets, at least not necessarily podcasting about them until now. And I'm hoping that there won't I'm tell you right now, there won't be another weekly Muppet cast.
You know, there's a little bit of knowledge in that head of yours about the Muppets and their history and shows and things that I. Yeah, right. Being Bunny, you rattle off three or four different things. That he's in. Come
yeah,
on, Steve.
Exactly. So so Muppets are still a huge love of mine, as is Disney. I don't know when the next time I'll be in the parks is, but when I'm back in the parks, I won't be alone. One of the really amazing and exciting things that's happened over the past year as well is I have met the absolute love of my life. And in fact, she's probably going to be coming through the door right now. No, not just yet, but she will be coming back pretty soon. And if you follow me on Facebook, you've seen who that is, and I'll leave that to those of you who are on Facebook. But it's been an amazing year for me as far as... just self-growth and introspection and development and musicality and spirituality and a lot of self-discovery, a lot of discovery about the world around me. And I've done that both on my own and through various websites. OneFansDream.com was a thing for a little while. That went by the wayside, as did Gordon and the Gollywonkers, my Muppet musical tribute site. I love, love, love playing music, and I still play that quite a bit around town here. In fact, I'm putting another little act together, and we'll post some video from that once that materializes. But doing the Muppet covers and recording them is a huge undertaking. I might do some more of that. It's one of those never say never things. You might see more of that in the future. You just never know. One of my real true loves and passions right now is going out and playing and writing and singing. And the biggest and best version of that has been with my soon-to-be stepdaughter, Kayla. You'll see some of the YouTube videos of me out there playing piano while Kayla gets out there and sings, and we have fun going out and being goofy. And you know, I've gone from 0 to 10 years old in about a year's time. So, yeah, you can laugh at that. And I'm sure a lot of people are laughing at that. And it has been an amazing ride. I'm still on the ride, and I've still Well, for a while I was gripping white knuckled both hands, and I've learned to just let go and let both hands fly up in the air and enjoy the hills and the tunnels. And just it's been really incredible. And it looks like Muppets and being back online will be part of that again pretty soon.
We can't wait to hear more. Thank you for taking some time to join us here on the Disney Nerds podcast. And I got to say, Steve, it's almost full circle for myself. We recently finished our March Madness countdown here on the Disney Nerds podcast, attraction style, and the Haunted Mansion came in first, by the way.
Oh, nice. Oh, love it.
So that was after our 64-team bracket countdown, which was reminiscent of your Muppet Madness tournaments that you've had in the past on your show.
Oh, yes. I missed doing that this year, but it was one of those things that just I just didn't have a whole lot of time for.
I got it. So I provided Ed with some audio that I had recorded probably 18 months ago for you to get on your show. That happened over at Riverside.
Yeah.
You may remember that. So that's a little special request for Yeehaw Bob.
Oh, my best friend and yours, Yeehaw Bob, Mr. Bob Jack.
Absolutely. So one of the things I do remember about the story, that wasn't the only time that you had somebody sing to you the Rainbow Connection on Disney property. Do you remember the other time?
Yeah. My two favorite places in Walt Disney World that don't involve being in a park are going to see Yeehaw Bob, of course,
right,
and then going to Jelly Rolls to see Scott is my favorite. I love Scotty to death. And so Shane knows Scotty a little bit better than I do. But if you go, Scotty's one of the four piano players that plays at Jelly Rolls. All four fantastically talented. They're amazing. Otherworldly piano players. I hate them all because they're better than me. But they're great. And Scotty, when requested, which is probably not every night, but it's every night that I've been there, will get up on the grand piano. He'll sit with a little wooden arm rod while the other guy plays the Rainbow Connection. He'll sing, "Why are there so many songs about rainbows?" And, of course, everyone loses their mind because it's just great to see someone singing the Rainbow Connection as Kermit in that place. So, so Shane has done that to me twice. He's made me forget what happened after that twice. There's a great Congaloosh indeed, my brothers. In fact, the second time, I think Brian came over from Jacksonville and hung out with us that night. And if you know the comedian Larry Miller, you'll know that there's a wonderful classic comedy piece called The Five Levels of Drinking. Well, we got to about level six that night and wound up we wound up arguing. I don't even remember about what, but it was a very spirited conversation. Back at the Pop Century pool, in front of the pool, I'm really glad none of us fell in because, you know, there's no lifeguard on duty. Swim at your own risk. But we had a great time both times at Jelly Rolls. And I love going to see Yeehaw Bob every time I can. And I've had some wonderful moments with him, just watching him play and watching that man command any audience that comes in. He's a genius in his own right, and I don't use that word lightly. Bob Jackson is a genius, and so I'm guessing that you're going to play the audio. If you haven't played it already in the show, you're going to play it round about now, right?
We're going to end with it, absolutely. The special request to Bob, he got me wrong. He said Sam from Chicago, and his buddy Steve in Columbus, but we all know Sam's in Pittsburgh.
He got me right.
He got you right, and that's all that counted.
You can still one real quick thing. You can still find me online. My Twitter is @MuppetCast. Still on Facebook, and very soon, and you might as well go ahead and set your bookmarks because I think it's going to become a thing. You can find me at theothersteve.net.
You still check that old email?
I do. Right. Yeah.
That's right. What's that email address?
That email address being me@muppetcast.com.
I love that. You got to say that one more time. What is it?
me@muppetcast.com.
TheOtherSteve.net, correct?
Yes, because .com was taken.
Thank you so much.
All right, thanks, guys.
Thanks, Steve.
Another request from my friend Sam for play a song for my buddy Steve up in Columbus, Ohio. So many so
Sailors, the voice that we want to say.